Welcome, welcome. Hey, everybody. How you doing? Joe McCall and Larry Goins. We're going to be talking about, on this episode, we're going to be talking all about due diligence. Due diligence. This is where the rubber meets the road, right? We got to make sure that we're making good offers. And after we get our offer accepted, we got to make sure that it's a good deal. And Larry, how you doing?
Man, I am doing great. How about you, Joe?
I'm excited.
I'm fired up and ready to go, man. You know, I've always said for years, you know, my South Carolina PhD, public high school diploma, definition of due diligence is separating fact from opinion. They tell you one thing, now you got to verify it, right? That's my definition of due diligence, separating fact from opinion, right? And there's a lot of things we can do. We're going to kind of go through like the standard stuff that you go through. And then we're going to talk about some specific things that are small town specific that you need to be aware of. And it's very, very important. Okay.
Very good. Yeah, very good. Let's go into it. Let's do it. Small town due diligence, determining the ARV. What is ARV, Larry?
After repaired value. Okay. And I got to tell you, there's like three different, when we went over analyzing, there's like three different ways, you know, is it a rental, is it a fix and flip, or is it a hotel type deal, right? So the ARV can vary depending on, does it have a tenant in it? Is the tenant current? Are they going to stay? Are you going to sell it to me vacant? Or is it a fix and flip property? Or is it a hotel property? Like if you have a property way out in the middle of nowhere, right? Like we got a house right now. It's out in the middle of nowhere, okay? And I shouldn't say in the middle of nowhere, but it's not a good rental property, all right? Because it's just too far from even the small town. So this is a property. It's a 3-bedroom, 2-bath, 1,800 square foot, double wide mobile home, vaulted ceiling, garden tub, plant shelves on 3.5 acres of land, right? We're paying $22,000 for it. All right. So this is not going to be a rental. It's a 1990 or 95 or something like that, which is a little older than I like, but I'm only paying 22.5. I could turn around and sell this thing for 49.9 or 59.9, maybe even 69.9 to somebody who has mattress money that's going to live in the property, right? So you've got to look at and think about, well, what am I going to do with this house? Is it a rental? You know, is it in an area where an investor can have other rentals, or is it out by itself? If it's out by itself, it's probably going to be an owner-occupied buyer that's going to buy it. Is it a fix and flip, right? Is it a fix and flip? It could be out and be a fix and flip, but it being a mid-90s or early 90s double-wide mobile home, it's hard to get financing on. So it's going to be a cash buyer, right? So that's not a good fix and flip. Even if we fixed it up and retailed it for $89.9 or $99.9, it's not going to be a good fix and flip because financing is hard to get on a 1990 or 95, I can't remember, mobile home, right? So you got to think about what is my ARV based on my exit strategy, right? So that's very, very important. You know, if it's a wholesale, it's ARV times 0.7 minus repairs minus what you want to make, right? And that's your max offer. If it's a rental property, it's 2% per month rents minus repairs minus what you want to make, all right? And if it's a retail or a hotel type property, right, you just want to be below what other houses are. Like if fixed up, this mobile home will bring $89 or $99. Even though it needs paint, carpet, some other cosmetic stuff, I can sell it for $59.9 or $69.9 pretty quick, right? So determining the ARV, I use, if I've got to look at what other homes have sold for, you know, there's a lot of sources out there, but I use Zillow. I don't look at the Zestimate. I look at the sold comps, the sold and the for sale to see what my competition is, right? And Joe, I know you, I mean, you know a lot of other sources that you use, that sort of thing. And we're going to get into those here in just a few minutes. But after the ARV, I want to determine ARV. Then what I'm going to do is I'm going to drive the street, all right? Now, if you can go look at it, or if you have boots on the ground, you want to go look at it, okay? If you can. That's very important. That's very important, okay? Go look at it or just drive the street online. It's up to you.
Can you use Google Street View maps to do that, or do you just you hire somebody to do that for you?
What we do is we just drive the street online with Google Maps. That's exactly what we do. You're exactly right.
And it's surprising, too, how many of these small towns actually do have Google Street View, isn't it?
It is. Now, here's the other thing. If it doesn't have a street view, it's probably on a dirt road, okay? And you're not going to buy it anyway, all right? Yeah. Now, especially if you're brand new. I'm buying a property right now that's on a dirt road, okay, on a gravel road, but it's about 4 or 5 acres, and I think I'm only paying $17,000 for it, 3-bedroom, 1-bath house, and the seller lives in it right now, right? So it's not a deal, it's a steal, okay? So somebody who wants 3 to 5 acres, they're not as concerned that it's on a dirt road. All right, because they want to be out by themselves anyway. Especially if I can sell it for $29,900 or $39,900, they're all in, right? And in a house that's livable, and they got 3 or 4 acres, right?
Hey, Larry, we're selling vacant lots that don't even have a dirt road. They're literally like, you just got to get your GPS on a 4-wheeler and go out
and find it. I love it. That's awesome. That's awesome. So. After we drive the street, then we want to look at rent comps, okay? Very important. You want to see what other properties are renting for so you can determine what the rental, a potential rental income is, and also what your buyer could rent it for, or what you could sell it for payment-wise with seller financing, if you did a lease option or seller finance, all right? Yeah. Then you want to estimate the repairs, and we're going to get into the different ways to do that. Estimate the repairs. You could do it per square foot or by a rehab estimate. You're going to get pictures and videos. I've mentioned this before, but you know, every room, any repair areas, all mechanical items, all 4 sides of the house, any outbuildings or garages, and a street view both ways, right? I'm getting more pictures than an appraiser gets, about 50 to 100 pictures.
Okay.
You also want to call realtors. Call realtors. You could get a CMA, comparative market analysis, right? Yep. Done by an agent. It's going to tell you, you know, how much the how much they think the property will sell for. You could call property managers to find out what they think the property will rent for. Rent comps. We mentioned that before, but call property managers as well. And, you know, you could get a survey if you need to. You could get an appraisal if you need to. You could get a home inspection if you need to. You know, basically, guys, here's what I do. I go look at it or send somebody. I get pictures. I pull comps. I pull rent comps. And I guesstimate the repairs. Notice I said guesstimate. All right? Now, years ago, I used to get 3 rehab estimates, a CMA by a realtor, and an ARV appraisal, okay? I used to get all that before I even put a property out to wholesale it. And guess what happened? People would come back on me, right, and say things like, I used your contractor and they ripped me off. Mm-hmm. My contractor, I don't have a contractor, right? Mm-hmm. I just provided you with 3 estimates. But they thought since I provided the estimates, it was my contractor, and my contractor ripped them off. I had to start putting in my contract that I'm not responsible for any third-party vendor information that's provided, you know, on the property, and use them at your own risk. I also had some people that would come back and say, hey, when I sold my house, my buyer's appraisal came in lower than yours. What are you going to do about it? I actually had a guy one time, Joe. I had a guy one time call me up, and he said, Larry, I bought a house from you about 6 months ago. He said, we fixed it up and sold it. He said, when we bought the house, all the numbers showed that we were going to make $40,000. We only made $25,000. What are you going to do about it? I thought about it for a minute and I said, I tell you what I'm going to do. I promise you, I'll never sell you another house you can make $25,000 on.
Oh boy. I know what you're saying. I've done the same thing where you tell people approximate rental, you know, estimates, repair estimates, ARVs. If you're going to do that, keep it as vague as possible and use ranges, you know, could rent for, if you think it'll rent for 800, maybe put, will rent for $700 to $800. If you want to say the ARV is 150, you might want to say the ARV is like 135 to 150. Repairs I don't even recommend estimating repairs when you're marketing a property anyway. Just list the stuff that you think it might need maybe, or just include pictures. You don't even have to include, I definitely don't recommend this. Don't include estimated ROI or return on investments. I don't like doing that personally.
Not unless you're selling a turnkey property, right? Mm-hmm. Where you've got a tenant in there, you have management in place, and you and the property's been rehabbed to the max, and you have a good idea based on experience what the total income and total expenses are going to be, right?
Yeah.
What we do is we do a range. We say something along the lines of $5,000 to $10,000 in repairs if you're going to rent it, you know, $15,000 to $30,000 in repairs if you're going to do a fix and flip, right? As an example, if the property would be good for both, right? Okay. Yeah. So we try to guesstimate the repairs as best we can, but we don't get rehab estimates. We don't get CMAs. We don't get ARV appraisal. I got to tell you this. It's been my experience that a lot of people either don't know how or they're too lazy to do their due diligence. So here's their due diligence. You're asking 50. I'll give you 45, right? That's their due diligence. They think if they can get $5,000 to $10,000 off that, hey, it must be a good deal, right?
Yeah.
But see, I've already negotiated the good deals. I've already negotiated them. So, you know, sometimes, especially if we put them on the MLS, we always add $5,000 anyway. But sometimes we'll have to increase the value a little bit, right? I mean, we've got four closings this week, right? Four closings. And we negotiate really, really hard, okay? And we do our due diligence and make sure. I mean, one of our closings, I bought a lot for $500 and sold it for $3,500, right? It's not a big deal, but it's in my son's ESA. I put an extra $3,000 in his ESA to pay for his private school, right? Although he's going to be homeschooled next year, right? So, you can't use an ESA for homeschooling, so I got to generate some cash and use it up this year, right? So, we got another deal we're closing. We bought for $15,000. We sold it for $50,000. That's a $35,000 profit, right? We got another deal we bought for $30,000. We sold it for $50,000. That's a $20,000 profit. And the other one is a $15,000, but I can't even remember the numbers, right? So we're doing a lot of deals. And in small towns, you might do fewer deals, but your profit margins can be much, much higher. I know in certain areas of the country, you know, maybe Dallas, Texas, or Phoenix, Arizona, Orlando, Florida, a lot of wholesale fees are like $3,000, $5,000, $7,000. Our average is $15,000 to $20,000.
Yeah, well, that's the same. It's here in St. Louis, too. Go Cardinals.
Yeah, baby. So let's talk, Joe, about some due diligence that's specific to small towns, okay? Things that you don't run into when you're in a big subdivision or a neighborhood, right? That's been platted and recorded and all that, okay? Let's talk about that. The first thing I want to talk about in the small town due diligence, guys, is it on city water and sewer or septic, okay? Well and septic, city water and sewer, okay? So you need to know what the deal is, right? I mean, I sold a house just last month where this property didn't even have a septic system. it ran in a pipe and ran way off down the hill somewhere, right? But it was a house with 7 acres. A house with 7 acres. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. But, you know, buyers didn't have a problem with it. They didn't have a problem with it, right?
Wow.
So you need to know if it's on a well or septic. Now, if it's on a well, is it a shared well? Because a lot of times in small towns, you have the parents built a house here, and right beside them, they built a son or a daughter, right? A house. And they're using the parents' well. So is it a shared well? If so, is there any kind of an agreement? Because what if the son and daughter, or son or daughter, you know, maybe they end up selling their property, and now you got a new owner that's glommed on to the parents' well, right? Is there any kind of a well agreement? So you need to ask those things and be aware if there's a house close by with relatives, that sort of thing, right? A lot of times in small towns, you know, their own city water and sewer, you don't have to worry about that. But if it's out and then there's two houses pretty close together, you need to always ask, right? You also want to look for the lot lines, right? Doesn't mean you have to get a survey on every deal. I don't get surveys. It's extremely rare that I get surveys, okay? But you need to have a good idea of where the lot lines are. And the good news is, even on like Zillow or LandGlide, those apps, they'll show you where the lot lines are. Now, they're not going to be perfect. It's not going to be exact. But you'll have a good idea if the house is encroaching on the lot line, okay, a house or an outbuilding or something like that, right? We bought a HUD house, Joe. This has been, I don't know, maybe 6 months or a year ago. But we bought a HUD house, and we didn't even know it. But it was the house plus another 10 acres of land that came with it. We thought we were just selling the house. We didn't even know that it had an extra 10 acres of land until we bought it and resold it. You know, had we known that, we would have raised the price up a lot more and promoted that it had 10 acres. You know how we found out about it?
No, how?
Our buyer told us.
Really?
Our buyer, we didn't even know. We did not even know, right? Or we would have raised the price, right? So they were gonna keep the house, right? Keep the house, fix up the house to sell it, and they were going to sell the 10 acres separately, right? See, I could have done that. I could have done that, but that was HUD. I didn't know that was a HUD house. So next small town thing you need to be aware of is zoning, okay? Zoning. What does the zoning allow, right? If you're buying a property in small town, maybe it's uptown, downtown, whatever, right on Main Street, you know, what is the zoning? There's some zoning in small town USA right in town that allows commercial on the ground level, residential on the second floor, right?
Yeah.
I was just in Rutherfordton this past Saturday, taking a look at a property that a friend of mine owns, and he's getting ready to sell it. And on the bottom level, it's office, and upstairs, it's a residence. Beautiful. I mean, you look out the window, you're looking right on Main Street, downtown, small town USA. It's really cool. You can walk to stores and restaurants and shopping and all that cool stuff, right? So Yeah. You want to know what the zoning is. And when you get out of town, a lot of times there's no zoning. No zoning. That's why a lot of times in small town USA, you'll see a single family house next to a double wide, next to a service station, right? Because there's no zoning in small town USA.
How do you find out the zoning?
Yeah, you have to contact the local a planning commission or the county, whatever county you're in. All you got to do, let's say you're in Rutherford County, North Carolina. You type in Google Rutherford County, North Carolina zoning, right? And you'll find the website. It might take you 2 or 3 clicks or 4 or 5 clicks, but you'll find it. If you're not really sure, go to an app like LandGlide or something and find the property, type in the address in LandGlide on your phone. And then what you do is once you get to the property, you click on the county link And on the county link, it'll tell you the zoning. Let's say the zoning is,
By the way, I know people are wondering, Land Glide, what is that? That's L-A-N-D, land, glide, like glide, G-L-I-D-E, landglide.com, and it's an app on your phone.
Exactly.
Wanted to clarify.
It's a really cool app, too. It really is.
A lot of people use it in the land business, too.
Yeah, it's a really simple app. Yeah.
It's $10 a month or $100 a year.
You're right.
But if you're doing a lot of these, you know, vacant land flips or small towns, you might want to check that out. I also use PropStream sometimes or DataTree to get vacant lot data.
Right. That's true. That's good. Those are all good. So check the zoning. If the zoning is, let's say, R2, okay? And different counties have different zoning letters and numbers, whatever. But let's say it's R2. All you do is Google Rutherford County, North Carolina zoning R2, and then it'll pop up and tell you what it means, right?
Yeah.
It might mean residential, two properties per acre, right? Or two buildings or two houses per acre, right?
Yeah.
So you want to check that as well. also, you want to make sure if you're buying a lot of acreage, because sometimes, I mean, Joe, you buy a lot of lots and land. You want to know, can you subdivide it? Can you build mobile homes on it or build or put mobile homes on it? Because I don't know about your experience, Joe, but my experience is land and lots are much easier to sell. They sell 10 times as fast if you can put a mobile home on it. Would you agree?
Yes, or if you can just... We're not saying you have to put a mobile home on it, but we're saying advertise you can put a mobile home on it.
In other words, mobile homes are allowed.
Yes, thank you.
Right.
For sure.
Mobile homes are allowed. Yeah, if their mobile homes are allowed, they sell 10 times as fast, right? 10 times as fast. In fact, I just sold one of the land deals I'm closing this week that I mentioned to you. I bought it for $500, sold it for $3,500, right? I first advertised, and it's in a subdivision with a lot of other like $150,000 brick houses, right?
Yeah.
So you can't put a mobile home on it. I could have sold that lot 20 times if I could have put a mobile home on it. I advertised it for $19,900 rent to own. I dropped it to $9,900 rent to own, right?
Yeah.
And then I dropped it, and I also was taking cash offers, right? So I told this lady she only had like $4,000. I said, okay, I'll take $4,000, right? So come up to closing. She's like, I'm a little short on closing costs. So I changed my price to $3,500, okay? I mean, you can't get hurt taking a profit, all right?
You can't go broke making money.
Right. You can't get hurt taking a profit. You can't go broke making money, right? I love it. So next thing in small town you want to be aware of is you want to look at the driveway. Right? Hmm. Is it a shared driveway? If it's shared, whose property is it on? Is it on yours or theirs? And if it's on theirs, do you have an easement? Right? Do you have an easement? Is there a flag lot? Now, what is a flag lot? A flag lot, very simply, think about a lot that looks like a flag on a pole. Okay? You've got the lot, right? You've got the lot. And then you've got the pole that comes down. The pole is the driveway to get to the lot, which is behind another house. Okay?
Okay.
So that's what that's what's called a flag lot. Okay? You drive down the pole to get to the lot, and it's behind another house. All right? They're very, very difficult to sell. Very difficult to sell. I've done it before, but they're difficult to sell. A lot of times, you'll find a flag lot where the parent lived on the highway or on the road, right? And then they gave the child some land behind it, but they had to cut them a little piece of land 10 feet wide to get to it down past their house, okay? That's what's called a flag lot, right?
Okay, yeah.
And really, the last thing that you need to be aware of when you're buying and selling in small town USA, you want to be 20 to 30 minutes from any Walmart, Walgreens, CVS, Home Depot, or Lowe's. If you're 20 to 30 minutes from any of those, you're not going to have a problem selling it. But if it's an hour to the nearest Walmart, it's going to be a little bit more trouble to sell the property. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Good old Walmart. Walmart's important. Or Piggly Wiggly. Do you have any Piggly Wigglies in South Carolina?
We do, man. We do. We have them all over South Carolina. Piggly Wiggly. That's a real grocery store, guys. Piggly Wiggly, right?
Or Dollar General. Yeah.
Man, Dollar Generals are great. They're everywhere. Small town USA. That's where they build them.
I've never been in a Piggly Wiggly. What's in it?
It's just a grocery store. I don't know if I've ever even been in one. But we have them. That's funny.
You know what's funny? You know what's funny, Larry, is you think, like, what are these retailers doing in these small towns? Those are some of the most profitable Walmarts, Piggly Wigglies, Dollar Generals. Some of the most profitable locations are in those small towns.
Exactly. Exactly. That's for sure. That's for sure. So let's talk a little bit about how to find these how to do your research, okay? Let's first of all talk about comps. I mentioned Zillow before. I use Zillow. It's very simple. It's free. You can also use Trulia. You can use your local MLS if you have access to it. RealQuest. RealQuest Express. I think it's express.realquest.com, I believe. Yep. That's the website. And Joe, you like Redfin, don't you?
I like Redfin when and where it's available. Sometimes it's not. You know, like usually Redfin is only in the MSAs, so you might have a hard time getting outside of the MSA with Redfin. But definitely, if you can find Redfin, I find that it has better MLS data than Zillow does.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And then there's RedBell.com, RedBell Real Estate.
RedBell Real Estate? Is that a local?
I think it's nationwide as far as I know. Now, I haven't searched properties in every state, but I'm pretty sure it's nationwide. And then there's Investor Comps. You know, a friend of ours runs Investors Comps. They do charge for it, but they have really good comp services. So there's a lot of options out there, guys, to get comps, right? You can also, as I mentioned before, call an agent, right? Call a property manager. But let's talk about rent comps. You can also search rent comps on Zillow. Instead of searching them for sale, just click the for rent and zoom out till you find them, right? You're gonna have to change your search criteria, okay? Change your search criteria, right? From 5,000 to 50,000, you're gonna have to change it from 0 to, you know, 2,000 or whatever, the range, right? But Zillow.com is great. RentRange.com is good. RentOmeter.com is also good. Also, you want to go to Craigslist. Whatever local market serves that small town, you want to go to Craigslist and look under properties for rent and see what other people are renting their properties for. And I can tell you this, whatever they're renting for, you can get more for it, right? Because most of them are small town mom and pops. They're trying to keep the rents low so they can keep their properties occupied, right? I mean, Listen, I bought a property yesterday where the rents on one of the units was $260 per month, $260 for a 3-bedroom, 1-bath house. And he said the tenant's been there over 30 years and he's only raised the rent one time. One time. Is that crazy?
Wow.
Now, surely in 30 years, listen, if they haven't left yet, they're not, you could go up $10 a year, right? $10 a year, right? And they could be bringing in another $30, $300 a month, right?
Yeah.
Is that crazy or what?
Yeah, that's amazing.
So also for rent comps, call a local agent, call a property manager as well. Now let's talk about crime. Guys, crime is not an issue like it is in the big MSAs. Occasionally, you'll find a small town that has a little pocket here and there of, you know, maybe it's a known drug area or a known crime area, but you're not going to find war zones like you do in the big cities, okay? You just don't find it. You know, it's another reason I say I love mobile homes. I've never seen a mobile home in a war zone, right? Never seen one, right? But to check the crime, you can go to Trulia. You can go to crimereports.com, spotcrime.com, zipskinny.com, and neighborhoodscout.com. All those will help you find out where the crime is. All you really need is Trulia. Just go to Trulia.com, type in the address, click on the crime report, and look for the map. They have a heat map. It used to be where it went from green to red, depending on the more crime, but now they go from green to blue. I don't know what happened, how they changed. Maybe they're liberals or something. I have no idea. But they changed.
I'm sure it has something to do with politics.
Maybe they changed it from red to blue because they're liberal. Who knows? They're Democrats.
Do you look at sex offenders? I'm sure every state has a different sex offender registry. Do you ever look at that?
You know what, Joe? If I'm being totally transparent, no, I don't. No, I don't. I don't look at it. You know, everybody's got to live somewhere. I can't even remember the last time that came up in an actual transaction, right? I can't remember the last time it came up.
It usually comes up
more in training than in transactions.
It came up to me recently. A lady wanted to sell her vacant lot in Oregon, and she was actually really honest with me. She didn't live there, but she said she had a very strange, weird neighbor. And she said, just Google him and you'll see what I'm talking about. And sure enough, this guy is bad, bad news. And I won't tell you the details, but like, he's bad. And so I just said, I'm sorry, I'm not going to buy it. Cause I didn't want to have to sell that property next to that guy.
Right. And
thankfully she told me. There's no way I would have known unless she told me, but I was looking back at that thinking, you know, maybe I should put in my checklist of things to do known sexual offenders. You know, I don't know.
That's a good point. And maybe I should too, but so far it hasn't come up, you know? Yeah. Here's the way I look at it. You know, as far as the sex offenders, nobody wants to live next to them. But I will tell you this, there's a buyer for every house at the right price. And you make your money going in. If you buy it right, I don't care who lives beside you, right? Doesn't make any difference. You can sell a property at the right price.
Yeah, and they say, especially with vacant land, that there's a saying that goes, there's a pig for every barn. And you just never know why somebody would buy this lot that's on the side of a mountain. Well, you know what? They might be rock climbers, right? They want their own place where they can go and climb rocks and practice and climb, you know?
Exactly.
And all that. I've heard of stories of somebody that goes and buys desert land in the middle of nowhere with a dry riverbed. Because they're rock collectors and they're mineral collectors, and they go and try to find minerals and gold in these dry riverbeds. People that will buy swamp land in Florida because they want to ride their four wheelers and they want to go mudding and get dirty and muddy, right? So, like, here's the cool thing: you buy this land or these houses so cheap, it's a no brainer. Plus, you've got the 60, 90 days in there to close. Larry, have you ever, I'm sure somebody's wondering about this too, you know, like, have you ever got a property under contract and realized something was wrong with it that was, you know, needed way more work, or there was environmental issues or whatever, there was no access or no utilities? Did you ever have to back out of a contract because of what you found during your due diligence?
Absolutely. And we don't have a due diligence period in our contract. But what we tell our seller is, you know, after doing our due diligence, unfortunately, we're not going to be able to move forward. And, you know, you can cancel the contract or you can renegotiate. Because after you do all your due diligence, then you renegotiate the deal if you need to. And we probably renegotiate, I'm guessing, I don't know an exact number, but I'm guessing it's about 1 in 4 or 1 in 5 deals. So probably about 20 or 25% of our deals, we negotiate the contract. And, I mean, we're closing on one this week that I was going to renegotiate it. I wanted to renegotiate it, right? It needed more work than we thought. And, I mean, we're still making $15,000 on it. But when I called the guy up and I talked to him about renegotiating the deal, he said, well, let me talk to my wife. She's not here right now. She's over getting some chemo right now. She's battling cancer, and so am I. And we were going to use the money to help send my granddaughter to college, right? So I'm like, man, I can't do this to these guys. I said, look, don't worry about it. We'll make the numbers work. We'll go ahead and we'll take care of everything. And there was also some other title issues that we had to work through. And there was a nephew living in the house that we had to get out. And he didn't want to have to deal with that because he didn't want to be the bad guy. So we just dealt with all of it. And, you know, our gross was 15, but our net was probably about 10 after everything we had to go through. But I just couldn't renegotiate that deal. But guys, don't feel bad about renegotiating a deal unless something like that comes up, you know. But we do it over the phone. We're just going to renegotiate over the phone and wait until you get a little close to closing, because they've already spent the money in their mind. They're planning on what they're doing next, right? And never just tell them about it's because you can't sell their house. Don't do that. You know, it's because of the repairs or legal problems you got to work through, title issues, or whatever it is, right? And then as soon as you get them to agree to it, then you just send them a brand new contract, which guess what? That starts the 60 days over again. Nobody ever asked, well, you know, weren't we supposed to close in 2 weeks? You got another 90 days, right? It's funny, but nobody ever says anything about that. If they do, all you got to say is, look, that's our standard real estate offer to purchase. We just need you to sign it with the new price. We're going to go ahead and proceed as planned, but you know, we don't change anything. It's a standard agreement, right? That's all you got to say.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know, one of the things that I do to negotiate or when I'm renegotiating is I blame it on the three R's.
Reading, writing, and arithmetic.
Reading. the retail value is not as high as I thought it was going to be. I blame it on the numbers. I blame it on the spreadsheet. The resale value is not where I thought it was going to be. The rental rates were not what we thought they were going to be after further due diligence. The rents are not as high as we thought they'd be. And the repair values, the repairs are more than we thought they would be. So you can blame it on the numbers, blame it on the three R's. And, you know, I know some people that renegotiate every deal. And I don't recommend that. Larry and I don't teach that. We don't practice that. You know, when you give a seller a commitment to buy it at a good, fair price, you shouldn't always try to nickel and dime and get another haircut. There's some investors that do that on every single deal. And they lie.
Have a legitimate reason.
Yes. They'll actually lie to the sellers and tell them, we're going to have to back out of this because there's something we didn't understand or didn't know this was going to happen intentionally. And that bothers me. We don't teach that. We don't do that. We don't recommend you do that either. When there's legitimate reason, you can go back to the seller and renegotiate a lower price. You know, if you didn't realize that the sewer lateral was going to have to be replaced or the septic system was going to have to be replaced, like that's a legitimate reason. Then you go back to the seller and renegotiate a lower price. But it's got to be legit.
Exactly. And the last thing I want to talk about due diligence is about repair estimates. You can get estimates if you want to. You can just give them a ballpark. You can also guesstimate, right, based on per square footage. For example, cosmetic repairs, you know, just cosmetic, right? Paint, maybe landscaping a little bit. You know, it's going to be about $8 to $10 a square foot. So if it's a 1,000 square foot house, $8 to $10,000, right? If it's a light rehab, maybe paint and carpet, maybe some floor covering in the kitchen or bathroom, maybe a couple other little things, that could be $12 to $15 per square foot. And if it's a major rehab, you're probably looking at about $18 to $20 per square foot. If it's gutted, $25 to $30 a square foot, right? So that could give you a little ballpark idea. It doesn't have to be exact. Just put a range, right? When you're going to sell your properties, you know, needs $5,000 to $10,000 in work, needs $10,000 to $20,000 in work, needs $15,000 to $30,000 in work. You know, some people are going to hire a licensed GC. Some people are going to hire, you know, a sub. Some people are going to do it themselves. And when you talk to sellers, they think the work can be done for about $2,000 to $3,000, right? Yeah. Because they're thinking, I'm going to Home Depot. I'm going to buy some paint. I got some brushes in the storage building, right? And I'm going to do it myself. See, you have to let them know. You know, hey, unfortunately, I can't get it done for $2,000 to $3,000. I've got to hire a licensed, bonded, and insured contractor that's reputable and going to get it done. So I have to pay a contractor to do it. I can't go out and do every house myself, right?
Yeah.
So I've got to figure retail rates for a licensed general contractor, right? A licensed, bonded, and insured contractor. And you want to use those three words: licensed, bonded, an insured, reputable contractor, right? So they know that you're not just fluffing up the value of the repair cost, right? Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. That's very good. It's important you do that.
Good, good, good. So guys.
You know what, Larry? I got something I want to share with you guys, and I just thought of this. I will put this in the course as well, and I'm going to share it. It's called a one-page repair sheet. And, let me find it here. Oh, I know where it is. It's in Google Drive. This is so cool because you can have your boots on the ground person fill this out. If you want a better estimate for repairs, you can have your boots on the ground guy fill. Oh, good. I found it. Here we go. So I'm going to share my screen with you guys right now. And, this will get you within 10, 15, 20%. Of what the repairs are going to be. And this is a sheet that you can actually give to your your notary, somebody that's going there, your boots on the ground inspecting the house. This is a property.
That's good. I love it. That's great, Joe. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, so it's like, does it need a new roof? Yes or no? And repair cost calculations. And you could edit this, maybe visit, sit down with coffee with a contractor and maybe get some better numbers here. But if you just need to add a shingle, a layer of shingles, it's $2,500 or $3,000. If you want to replace a full roof, $5,000 for a typical 1,500 square foot house, right?
Right.
Does it need exterior paint and siding? Yes or no? If it's a single family paint, $3,000. If it's a multifamily, $6,000. If it's siding, $7,000. You see what I'm doing here?
It windows, even gives you the prices of all the items, which is really good.
Yes. Uh-huh.
It'll give you a ballpark. It's not going to be exact, right? Yes. Because different areas of the country have different labor rates and material costs.
Yep. Interior paint, $1.50 to $2 a square foot is general rule. Does it need new carpet? If it's single family, about $1,200. If it's units or so this is just a really simple. You can get in here and bump the prices up $1,000, $500 if you want, right? But like this little spreadsheet table, your person who's taking pictures can go in there and fill it out for you. And it'll give you a good estimate for repair costs, and you can add, 5-10% for unknowns and contingencies and things like that. So I'll put this in the course. This will be good for folks.
That's great. Thanks, Joe, for doing that. Yeah. So guys, on the next video, on the next module, we're going to talk about building your buyer's list. In small town USA, there's a lot of things you can do. Some are small town specific, and some will work anywhere that you're buying and selling properties. So we'll see you on the next training.
All right, good.